Saturday morning, it's hot and cold. Good morning. That's how we start radio on Saturday mornings, boys and girls. You, if you're taking lessons, you're taking notes, you know, I ain't going to be here forever. So you got to start with Joe Cocker. That's good. Leon Russell, Bobby Keys on the saxophone. Bobby Keys, the Rolling Stones, famous slash infamous saxophone player who did all the incredible stuff way back when. When we were mere youths, boys and girls. Good morning. It's June 1st. That means it's really like summertime. Yeah. Kind of, sort of. We're almost there. You know, it'll be July 4th. It'll be summer. Oh, man. So, a lot of stuff going on. I said last week, I think we had moved. We had set up in our new location. And we did. And I don't know if I told the story, but I'll tell it now. If I'm repeating myself from last week, I do apologize, but I don't remember everything I say anymore, like I ever did. Last Friday, I'm in my office in Searsport, and I'm going to call Spectrum, and I'm going to cancel my service. So we already have service at the other location, the new location, right? So I call up. You know, you're on hold forever, and finally, I talked to a human being. I said, I want to disconnect my service. And he comes back, says, okay, you're disconnected. No. I want to be disconnected for Tuesday, you know, when we're starting the new location. Oh, well, I can reconnect you, and then you can call back and disconnect again. I said, I don't have time to sit here on the phone anticipating this. So anyway, We unplugged all the computers, unplugged the phones, all of which was non-functional at that point, ran over to Stockton Spring, plugged everything in, and then proceeded to run back and forth for the past week. So I was supposed to be out by the 31st, which was yesterday. There's still a couple odds and ends in the building, but we're pretty much everything is out. I mean, I thought I was out a week ago. But there was still a lot of stuff there, and Pete and I put a lot of miles on yesterday, running back and forth, and but we were there, and so the couple things that have not moved yet that I will put out there because I have the power of the pulpit or the microphone on Saturday morning, the insulated shed that I built many moons ago, that is extraordinarily structural and highly insulated. Did I say highly insulated? I think I did. Is still in the building. I have to move it out. I would prefer to move it out and give you a stinking good deal on it just because I don't want to move it two times. It's going to my house if it doesn't go anywhere else. Excuse me, but I don't want the project right now. So that will be a deal. You can call during business hours, talk to Pete about it. Also, I have a big DC electric car motor that's got to go bye-bye, and that's $150. Just get it out of my sight. It's heavy, and because it's a very powerful motor. And I got a couple of pellet stoves we're letting go just because, again, I don't want to move them. One's an Englander, and the other is a Tractor Supply made by Pelpro. The Tractor Supply one needs a little bit of love, but it's a 1-year-old, 2-year-old stove, something like that. Still being sold. So my wife and I were discussing. She said, "Well, you should have some kind of promotion at the new location, and you know, for the first person that buys a car there, because we haven't sold any cars there yet. I did sell the Vespa last weekend, but I was in Searsport when that went. Some very nice folks from Turner. But anyway, nothing has sold yet from the new location just because it might have been somebody came in and we were running back and forth and missed them. But my wife says, why don't you give a banjo away with each car? I said, no. What are you talking about, woman? Was she drinking? Giving away banjos. But we will have a giveaway. And we'll talk about that when Pete comes on later, second hour of the radio program. So that'll be interesting. And By the way, folks who, and Jack, if you're listening in particular, I'm going to get your car done. Everybody who has had me doing car work has suffered this past week because I have this dead, hard and fast thing. I have to be out of the building, and I don't move as fast as I used to, but I do have your car in the works, and it will be done very, very soon. So I had some cars ahead that we did knock out this week. I'm not sure how I did it, but I did. And what else? I guess we'll take a break because it's 8:15 already. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls at 1-800-966-1039. Now, we got the text line up and running, 601-207-4478. Hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. It's 8:19. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning, and it's June. When did that happen? Oh, it happened last night, didn't it? Yeah. Mr. Wonder's going to have us doing the reggae boogie on Saturday morning. That's what we're going to do. It's phone number's 1-800-966-1039. We got text line up and running, 601-207-4478. What do I got? Oh, so every so often I get into some kind of TV show, and a lot of them are usually stupid, like The Curse of Oak Island, where you sit there like an idiot for an hour and they find a nail and it's an old nail, and the announcer comes on, an old nail? What could this mean? Control your language, Tom. Okay, watch what you're saying. Well, anyway, I came across, flipping through the channels, as I oftentimes do now, I came across a TV series, I think it's a four-part series, on Chernobyl. I want to tell you, this is good. It's really enlightening. Excuse me. What they went through, those people who really kind of saved a lot of people's lives by risking their own. And there were a number of people who died from radiation exposure. And it was pretty, it's pretty eye-opening program. And it's kind of funny. Our first child was born right after Three Mile Island. And our last child was born as my wife was in labor. We were in Eastern Maine Medical Center, and the TV is on, and we're watching the fire at Chernobyl. So I don't know what that means, Gozy Children bookending nuclear accidents, but but it was pretty spooky then. It's even spookier now because you get to see the behind-the-scenes stuff of and the folks who really saved the situation from being much, much, much worse than it was. And it wasn't good, but fascinating. And I think it was done in the UK. And I don't know how to say this accurately, but all these folks really looked Russian. I don't know if they, and I haven't paid attention to if the actors are British or Russian, but boy, they did a good job. So that was, it's been a fun watch. If you get to see it sometime, it's worth your time. There isn't much on television I find that's worth my time, which is why I sleep through most of it. But this one keeps me awake in more ways than one, I guess. So anyway, what else? Oh, moving in. So I we moved from a 6,000 square foot space that probably had closer to 7,000 square foot of usable space because we had built some areas inside the building that were two-story, okay? So, because we had specific uses for those areas. And so we went from that to a 2,000-square-foot building and probably another 1,000 square feet in some small spaces, some of which, some is office space. Some of it is not usable for our purposes. And so I recognize the fact that I didn't use my six. If you have 6,000 square feet, you just throw something on the floor and leave it there for 3 years and not think twice about it. In 2,000 square feet, it becomes a little more challenging. So I've been endlessly trying to organize as things land there. and I need floor space, and I'm supposed to be bringing cars in to work on, which I have yet to bring a car into the shop. We can do it, but we're not quite there yet. So, I finally got the photovoltaic panel outside of the building. It's in the sun. It's not hooked up, but it's in the sun. I think that was a major step, and that freed up, you know, probably 40 square feet right there. Even though I've got more stuff in there, it's slowly stuff's getting put away and organized in such a fashion. And then we had a big order of tanks that had to go out this week, and that consumed an extraordinary amount of Pete and Maria's time just to get it done. I was able to just keep running back and forth with things. And the interesting thing is Pete and I have had this challenge going on between ourselves of who both have iPhones, who's had more miles each day this week. And Pete has beat me, I have to admit, but he is almost half my age. I've been very close. I've been within a couple hundred feet or steps, excuse me, of his numbers. But we've all kind of hustled. I went over there yesterday as we were moving stuff back and forth. My daughter's out in the driveway with a little hand pick moving rocks around. So we're building a rock wall from the gravel that we have, which, as we say in Maine, is kind of bony. So it's got a lot of rocks in it. So we've been ferreting out the rocks. And we're going to have quite a rock wall by the time we get done. And there's actually a tie-in here to what we talk about normally on hot and cold in terms of construction. The office space that we've had and used in the past had some windows that were aluminum framed with insulated glass with an additional energy panel on the inside. So they were really triple glazed windows. And the seals had failed on the insulated glass. So you could see out of them, but it was kind of hazy. Didn't look good. They kind of looked like something from the 70s. Not anything worth keeping or trying to fix. So I had picked up some really nice high-end Anderson gliding windows that looked like something that would be in a cottage, which we were planning on shingling the office and re-roofing it. So it wasn't an imperative that it be done right away, but Memorial Day, I said, well, let me just see how difficult it'll be to do a window. And next thing I know, the window's out and there's a hole in the building, and now I've got to put the window in, which I did, and wasn't too big a deal. Got it done. But we had gotten two of these windows, both the same. They're gliding windows, and they have little glides on the bottom and top of the windows that go into a channel, you know, so they glide smoothly. And the first one I put in, the little dew flickers on the top and bottom weren't in right, so I finally figured that out and got it set up, and that window opened and closed okay. The second window, the sash were out of the frame, which I did not perceive as any big deal, except the dew flickers were missing some parts. So the window doesn't glide properly. And, of course, I discovered this after I took out the original window on Tuesday. And it was cold Tuesday, and it started to rain later in the day. So I got it. I jerry-rigged it enough so I could close the window and seal it, and we had a secure building more or less tight for now. But I got online at some point, realized I'm missing these dew flickers, these little glide thingies. There's a little piece of plastic with a spring. You know, it's a nothing little part, except when you need it. So I said, okay, it's an Anderson window. Anderson's got parts, and I get online. So I'm looking through the Anderson things, and they've got the window sash, which are crazy expensive. I don't need a window sash. I need the little glides. They don't have the glides. They got locks. They've got safety things. They've got all this stuff that you would use for the window. It's all in sections. And this little mechanical part that is probably one of the more important parts of the window is not available. And I looked I went through probably a half dozen Anderson sites, excuse me, as well as the Anderson website that doesn't, it shows the part as a more elaborate mechanism. There's extra bits to it, But the I couldn't even find that, you know, the whole thing. I went on eBay. I thought, well, maybe, you know, somebody on eBay is going to sell this. No. So anyway, but I got it for now, and it's functioning. The window open and there's two sash. One is fixed, one's not. The fixed sash was the one that is missing the dew flicker. So I will try to sort that. At some point, Tuesday was not the day to call Anderson to see about this. But they look nice, and the plan now is the windows actually are outside of the building a little bit. What we did with this building was it had old Masonite paneling on the inside. We took that down, and behind that was 3.5 inches of fiberglass full of ants and rodents and all kinds of stuff. So we cut and fit 3.5 inches of foam into the wall cavity, sealed it. We put OSB up over it just because I don't want to sheetrock. And it's easy to hang stuff off OSB. I did paint it, which you don't paint OSB. Not without kills or something on it, because you get some bleed through. But and then on the outside of the building, we're going to put 1.5 inches of foam and an OSB again, and then we're going to shingle. So when we're done, it's going to be nice, and we're going to put a metal roof on too. So, you know, my spare time. But we're more or less done moving, so I'm not going between two buildings, and that will make the process simpler, I think. Anyway, I tell you what, let's take care of a little bit of business right now, and when we come back, we'll take some phone calls, text messages maybe, and let's see, we got text messages? Not yet. No text messages. It's 601-207-4478. What's going on? It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 8:36. It's hot and cold on Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. I just want to tell you about my friend Alan over at General Appliance in Brewer. Alan, by the way, in case you live in Orrington, Alan is running for selectman in Orrington. I don't know why, but I guess maybe because things are a little wacky over there. Or a little in up, not wacky, a little tumultuous. So, anyway, he's on Center Street in Brewer. His General Appliance, if you need appliance parts or service, he fixes things. You want to call him at 989-4341. He'll tell you how to fix things. That's good. And 989-4341. He's open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. Appliance parts, service, refurbs. He's got them all. And he's Alan. And you knew that. And you want to talk to him, I'm telling you. And we're going over to line one where we're going to talk to somebody. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Enjoying this brisk morning, to say the least.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm looking at building a camp or a vacation kind of small home up in northern Aroostook County. Hmm. And I'm going to build it myself. I'm going to cut my own lumber. My own logs to make my own lumber, and which I've done several times. Mm-hmm. But the issue I'm kind of having is I originally wanted to build like a story and a half, and that way I'd kind of have like a loft upstairs. But then I run into issues with insulating a cathedral ceiling properly and ventilating the roof. Mm. And, you know, I plan on using 2x8 rafters. Mm-hmm. My original thought was to just put 8 inches of Roxol in and then 2 inches of rigid foam on the inside. Mm. And that gets me to like R40 or so.
Yeah.
But I don't have of course, it doesn't leave me any ventilation space for a metal roof.
Right.
And the building center I talked to kind of had a fit when they said, oh, you got to ventilate a metal roof. You know, you got to have airflow underneath.
I don't think you do. I think, if I was in your situation, and I have the luxury of cutting my own wood, the way I would approach this, and it doesn't have to be this way, but this is one way, you're doing 2x8s. If you wanted to leave them exposed and then put something like where you're cutting your own stuff, maybe a shiplap board over that, and then a solid layer of foam, let's say for the sake of discussion, 5 or 6 inches of foam, and then strap over that into your rafters, and then you can apply your metal roof right to that. The here's the deal. Why do we ventilate a roof? Let's, go back to the basics here. We ventilate a roof because we have warm, moist air that condenses inside the roof cavity, and we need to get that humidity or actual moisture out of that cavity. It doesn't happen if you have, even in the way you described it, that layer of foam preempts the warm, moist air from getting up in there if it's sealed properly. So right. And it's a nice, 2 inches is a nice, thick vapor barrier. So if all the joints are sealed, where it meets the floor, where it meets at the peak, anywhere in between, any penetrations where your stack goes up through or chimney, if all that's sealed, ventilation is not an issue. Additionally, a metal roof doesn't – why are we ventilating a metal roof? There's no official reason to have to ventilate a metal roof other than if there is moisture that gets up into the cavity. In this case, there wouldn't be any. Ventilating it, I think, would actually, in the way you described it or the way I described it, if you ventilate that metal roof, you're more apt to have some condensation forming in the evening as things cool down. The metal roof tends to cool down quick enough that you get the backside of the metal below the dew point, and there could be a little bit of dripping. It wouldn't be a big issue if you have foam because it isn't going to get through. But just one other thing. If you look at most metal roofs that are being put on today, they are not ventilated. Somebody's retrofitting over an old house. They've got shingles on there. They put strapping down. They put metal over it. That's not ventilated. There's no ventilation there. So whoever told you this has their head someplace it shouldn't be. Ooh, that was.
So do you think, I don't want the look of the, to be able to see the 2x8s from inside. I just figured I would fill the 8-inch cavity with 8 inches of Roxul.
Okay.
And then go 2 inches of foam on the inside. And then I was going to do just B-joint pine over the 2 inches of foam.
Okay. So
on the inside.
Yeah. And that would be fine. I would strap the over the foam. So you're not having to nail through the foam. You're nailing into the strapping.
Really?
Just so it's easier for you. I mean, because otherwise you're going to be poking. Oh, yeah. If you're like me, maybe God willing, you're not. You're going to miss the rafter on a regular basis because you're trying to go through 2 inches of foam with a long nail. So if you strap it every 2 feet, and screw into the rafter, you've then looking at your nailing surface, which in this case is 2.5 inches wide instead of 1.5 inches wide, and it's not behind 2 inches of foam.
So I kind of have another question on the same line. I was in a new house being built, and the whole house was spray foamed, and they said they were shooting for R22 in the walls. And then after I left the house, I was kind of thinking about it, and I was thinking to myself, was that new house framed with 2x4 walls? So on these houses that they're spray foaming, these new houses, are they building them with 2x4 walls?
Probably. And that's part of the issue here. So you've got R22 in the cavity, which is great. It's spray foam. It's tight as hell. But the stud is R, 4, 5, 6, something like that? So every 16 inches, you've got this thermal compromise. So R22 and then R6, you have to do the math to average it out to see what. So your average wall R value is a lot less. The good news is it's tight. The bad news is, and Dick and I worried about this all the time, we talked about it on the radio, is there potential for moisture problems on those studs because they go from inside to outside? I think, God willing, the mass of the stud being wood has some mass to it, allows it to not get below the dew point at some point and rot, because if moisture can sneak out through there's just a potential there for a problem. I don't think it's an issue, but certainly, at very least, it is watering down the actual R value of the building.
Right.
It's better than nothing, way better than nothing, but it's not, not an ideal installation as far as I'm concerned.
So on this camp that I'm going to build, I planned on using 2x6 walls and using fiberglass bats and maybe putting 1 inch of foam on the outside.
Yep.
And seal all the joints.
Yep.
Because cost is always a factor. I mean,
sure.
a fellow would like to use the zip system with the 2 inches of foam on it, but it,
yeah, it's,
you know,
expensive.
The zip system with 2 inches of foam is $75 a sheet.
Yeah, don't do it. Do it separately. It's you know, we used to sell a product called nail board, which was manufactured here in Maine. It was OSB with foam on it, and it's the same as the zip system, except the zip system is has a coating on the OSB, so it's waterproof or very water resistant. And it was really expensive if you had to buy it new. We were selling factory seconds at the time, so it was less. We were buying the OSB bonded to the foam as if it was just a hunk of foam. So that was a pretty decent deal.
Right.
But when it came to the time that I needed to use some myself and I had none available from my suppliers as seconds, I would use regular foam and buy the OSB and apply them separately. You know, a little extra labor, not a lot. You use two or three nails to hold the foam in place, put the OSB over it and screw it in place. And, you know, in some ways it's a little bit simpler to do that. One thing I would suggest, and I'll be doing this on our building where I mentioned we're doing the office, where we're wrapping the outside with foam, the bottom of the wall on the outside, you want to have a wooden cleat there. And I would suggest using pressure treated just to keep critters from trying to get up into the foam.
Yeah, that was. I was curious if a fellow would take aluminum coil,
yep,
and bend it, and then just with a lift that would go underneath.
Yep, you could do that too. I've done it both ways. I like the idea of that thick physical barrier, but you can do it with aluminum coil stock and be fine, especially if you got a metal brake. Just bend it right up,
yeah,
and just it'll keep them out. And of any, you know, it could be mice, it could be ants, it could be anything. It just makes sense to do that. And it's
the other question that I had was, I was wondering if in the long run it would just be simpler, instead of doing a story and a half with a loft, just to do a full second story and then just blow in the attic space full of insulation.
Yep. You could do that. The ventilation is a little more critical there. I would have gable end vents if you've got blown in the attic. But the metal, I wouldn't worry about the metal roof. I'd blow right up to it and just have some gable end vents. I think you'd be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you for your information.
Okay.
It's kind of a lot to think about ultimately.
Well,
as you're
working through, we're here every Saturday. So feel free to call back.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye. So the one other thing I didn't mention, I just want to reiterate. Regardless of what kind of ceiling you're doing, recessed lights, lights that have cans that go up into the ceiling and poke a hole through that barrier, are really a bad actor in terms of getting moisture up into the attic, which is what we don't want. And the good news is that it's 2019 and we can buy LED lights that look like recessed lights, but they're more like hockey pucks that just apply to the inside surface. You will run a wire through, but you can seal that. And the LED lights don't build up heat the way the other lights did, be they compact fluorescents or halogens or incandescents. So they don't have to have that ventilation or that airspace on the backside, and they're not pulling heat, warm, moist air from the building up into the attic cavity. So it makes a big difference. Over to line two. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes. I got a question for Tom about foundation.
Yes, sir. You're talking to him. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Tom. I built several houses, garages. Cement floors always crack. Usually the contractor comes in and digs around, puts cheap fill in, and then they try to compact a little bit. They run around with a compactor.
Hmm.
Would it be better just to put screen stone in so it doesn't settle, put a vapor barrier over the stone, then pour your cement? I mean, the stone will not compact or compress like dirt will, but...
It will to some degree, and what I learned a long time ago from an engineer friend was that if you grade the site and then you just let it be rained on, the natural lubricity of the water lets all those particles settle down. Now, But we did one years ago, and they put a of course, it wasn't raining, and we wanted to get the building done, so they put a sprinkler on the thing for a week and just let it get wet and work itself down. If you can, you have the luxury of a little bit of time, just let it sit for a while, and it will kind of settle in on itself. Yeah, crushed stone will work better, or some kind of more screened gravel. The critical thing is, are they putting rebar in the slab, or are they just pouring it?
Just pouring it.
Yeah. I'm a real belt and suspenders guy when it comes to foundations. And I'm not an expert, but I know enough that when we did our slab, we put in rebar. And we also put in, we also used fiber reinforced concrete, which helps to keep cracks from even starting. So between the two, and engineers, civil engineers who design these things, always use rebar. If I'm putting a building on something, there's going to be some kind of rebar in there, and more is better than less.
Right.
And it's not that expensive. I recently bought it, so it didn't freak me out the way some things do.
Right. Okay. My brother was going to build another place on a lake, kind of a retirement home.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked about the foundation and the ones he had, the floors cracked, the garage floors cracked.
Yep.
Not to a big extent, but when you go to pay the money to have something done like that, the last thing you want to see is a crack.
Yeah. And, it's apt to happen, and rebar mesh, it doesn't have to be, rebar, half-inch rebar. It can be mesh just as long as it's there to help hold it together, especially if something settles. I've been in buildings where the underlayment, if you will, the fill underneath sloughed off, or for some reason it eroded away, and the slab is hanging there because it's got rebar in it. It just stays right there. And, that's the reason for rebar.
Yeah. All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, good luck. Bye-bye.
Appreciate your show.
Appreciate it. Thanks. It is critical. And it's not that expensive, and by all means do it. We got a whole bunch of texts here. Let's see what we got here. Tom in Sangerville, he's going for a motorcycle ride today. Good day for it, Tom. Drive safe. How about some Hank Williams Jr. on your next outro? Oh, he's in Bangor tonight. Him and Skinhead are in Bangor tonight. I thought, that'd be a... There's a song. I don't know if I could... I'll see what I can do. There's one that I really like. I don't think I could play on the radio, and I think you know what I'm talking about. Let's see. Lifespan of a mini split, 10 years. Home's 950 square feet, ranch with oil. Thinking about... the cost versus savings. I would say, yeah. I mean, we're pushing 10 years on it. I don't think there's any necessarily planned obsolescence or obsolescence that comes into play. We'll find out. But I think it's safe to assume a 10-year life expectancy. I don't know what the warranty is on these units. It's different for different units, but, see if we can find some numbers on that. And what we got, oh boy, this is a long text. What do we got? How far back am I going here? I've got to save this one for next hour, because it's got it's got paragraphs. Anyway, let's do this. We'll take one more phone call, then I'll digest the text during the break. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Cement and Maine climate just doesn't mix. We've got to start building houses up on posts and stuff. In Alaska, they use rebar.
Yeah.
Somehow.
I've seen
off the ground.
I've seen that where they basically have a truss built out of rebar because of the permafrost. I don't necessarily agree with you that cement doesn't mix in Maine. I think cement used improperly doesn't work, and it's all site preparation, and it's you can't. There's certain things you can't cheap out on, and believe me, if there's a way to do it more economically, I'm going to try to do it. But when it comes to a foundation for a building, You know, you can look around at old garages in Maine, and some are fine, and some of the slabs are all torn up. Well, the ones that are all torn up, I don't think you need to be a rocket scientist to understand there was not good site preparation. And it's a little bit of civil engineering that goes into this. And also finding somebody who's reputable to do the slab helps, or concrete work, makes a big difference. And the site work preempts all of that in terms of not having a problem down the road. So maybe you spend $1,000 extra in proper grading, proper drainage, ensuring that it's sealed properly, the rest, and it makes a big difference. I was looking at the building we just moved out of in Searsport. There's a perimeter around the front of the building I was in that was concrete. And I have to pave, excuse me, where we are now. And I'm waiting for some quotes on asphalt, and I know it's going to take my breath away. And I'm looking at, and most of the driveway where I was paved, but part of it was concrete. And that concrete is still there, and it hasn't cracked to any significant degree. It's outside every year. It doesn't spall, but I did notice where people have dropped heavy equipment on it and eroded away some of the surfaces. I can see the half-inch rebar in there. And rebar is important when it comes to these things. We got to take a break. We're right up against it here. Let me got to hit the tune real fast so we don't run out of time. We'll be back in a bit. It's hot and cold. Stay with us Saturday morning. Oh, man. I got to talk. I hate to talk when I have this song on. It's hot and cold. I'm back. Hour number two. I'm Tom. It's a Saturday morning. Good morning again. Steely Dan. What a great song. I have had this, I confess, I have had this song on repeat at times. I think in my office, which probably doesn't thrill anybody I work with, but what a great song. It's still going. All right, phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. So the long text was really about somebody's kind enough to suggest that they might have somebody who works with Anderson. I can get on the phone. I just didn't have time to get on the phone and call. I'm sure they have what I need available. Those guys are still going there. I'm just going to leave that in the background because that's what you call subtext to the radio program. And also mentioned that another option for insulating, of course, would be to double stud and spray foam the cavity. That gets really expensive. Let's just take a quick moment here. I will shut off Steely Dan because it will be a little distracting otherwise, and I'll want to turn it up and not talk. If you know, years ago when I first started looking at insulating, I had bought an old house in Bangor. It was a gorgeous old house. It was a barn. It was not insulated. It was cold as death. And first thing I did, I bought it in September, and I had somebody blow cellulose in the walls and in the cap. And they did an okay job. And that first winter, it was a really bad winter. It was 1980, I think. And we were miserable. It was hard to keep the house warm. So I then decided, well, okay, I'm going to double stud. Well, rooms were big enough. If I lose, say, 6 inches or even 8 inches on the two outside walls in a room that may be 12 by 12, it's still a pretty good-sized room. And most of the rooms, this is the Bangor box-style house, most of the rooms were square. So I built a stud wall inside the stud wall. I took off all the trim, built the stud wall in, spent a lot of time trimming around windows, and I found there was no difference. I fiberglassed the cavity. In between the studs, fiberglassed bats in the wall cavity, still miserable. So what I had done was an analysis of cost per square foot per R value, and the fiberglass was a cheap date. I said, hey, I'm going to use fiberglass. Well, you know, fiberglass is permeable to air, And I think I put a vapor barrier in. I didn't do a very good job because I didn't know what I was doing. So then I said, okay, the next room I do, I'm going to put 2 inches of foam in. And that's going to make a difference. I don't care about cost. I'm going to put 2 inches of foam. I put 2 inches of foam. I put edge and center bead or V-match over it. And that room was still miserable. Okay. I didn't seal the joints well, so there was still infiltration. Okay. So then I had this room that was a bathroom that was maybe, 3 feet wide, maybe 8 feet long. It was a weird-shaped room, long and narrow. And that outside wall was 8 feet by 8 feet. But it wasn't a very big room. No heat in the room. Another cold spot in the house. But I had done some radiant floors, and I had, I think, 3/4 inch foam left from insulating underneath the radiant floors. I said, okay, let's do something a little different this time. We're going to put in 2 layers of 3/4 inch, which isn't that much insulation. I'm going to put it in. I'm going to seal the joints. I'm going to caulk everything. And that became the warmest room in the house. I said, there's a key here. We have to seal it when we insulate. So then I did another room, another big room, with 4 inches of foam on the inside. Again, I sheetrocked over that. Sealed all the joints, and that was a comfortable room. So I said, you know what? I'm on to something here. And have continued down this road for many years since. Access to foam helps. And just, excuse me, for comparative purposes, as the emailer had said, the spray foam is somewhere between $1 and $1.50 per board foot. That's 1 square foot, 1 inch thick. This is for a higher density closed cell foam. That would be between 6 and 7 per inch of thickness in terms of R value. If you go to Home Depot and shop foam, I think they're getting $20 for 1 inch now. So that's 32 board feet for $20. So that's what, about 66, am I doing that? No. A buck, Yeah, 66 cents a board foot. So it's about half the cost. And as you get thicker in insulation and sheet insulation, in theory, cost should go down. Now, just to make this a little more complex, if you go to a place like Home Depot or Lowe's, the foam I'm talking about that is the urethane foam that has a higher R value is yellow. Trade name might be Tough R Energy Shield, Thermax. They also sell expanded polystyrene, which is white, what we would call beadboard, with foil facing on it. That's a lower R value. It's also lower cost. And it's going to mean that you have to have more thickness of that insulation to get to a given R value. So you have to sort of look at the cost per square foot per R value to get a sense as to which is more cost effective. So it's not a, you just don't go in and say, I want foam. I have, in years gone by when we were manufacturing tanks, which we still are, I would call a lumber yard and say, I need, 10 sheets of 2-inch urethane foam. And I would get styrofoam. Or I would get, at the time, I'm dating myself now, they had a something called a phenolic foam. I would get everything but what I wanted, which was a urethane foam, which it would tolerate the moisture and the temperature that a tank would see. So anyway, I hope that helps. A couple of other text messages here. Do they make a manual transmission Prius? No. Let's see. I couldn't agree more with your comments on civil preparation, draining, subgrade, substrate, important, and reinforced rebar. Yes. Thank you. Jim from South Bristol. Good morning, Jim. Question regarding any cement floors, foundations, floating slab versus short foundation wall with footing, then poured concrete slab inside walls, thinking that is better fit for more money. What is your opinion? It Might be, Jim. And the what I'm always looking at when I'm trying to analyze something like this is, how do we insulate it? Now, if you have a frost wall and a slab inside, you just insulate in between the slab and the frost wall. You insulate underneath the slab, and you're done. You've the edge insulation is protected. The problem is you now have this frost wall that may or may not be a thermal short circuit, depending on how the walls are situated, how tall the, if the frost wall has any height above the slab, then it's just sucking heat out of the room. In our case, we did a floating slab, so there is no frost wall. It's just thickened at the edge. We insulated underneath it. I have not insulated the perimeter yet. That's one of my summer projects, and I will get a shovel and a hoe and dig around the foundation. Now, you may find this hard to believe. I put the slab in, and it is not square. It's relatively square. I take that back. It's not necessarily level. I used a line level. I should have used a transit, but I used a line level, and I was working by myself mostly. So when the guys came to put up the building, I get the phone call the second day from Moses, who says he couldn't pronounce my last name. He goes, "Mr. Tom, can you come over here? I got to show you something." He says, "Hey man, your slab's not level." I said, "I know that. I put it in." So they had to make some adjustment on the legs of the wall, so the building was level itself, you know, the eaves and the peak and everything. And it was like $300 to make that adjustment. I said, "That's fine. I'm still way ahead of what it cost, even though I'm not the best." And the slab on one end is a little bit bigger than the building. So I've got to do something about that. So here's the plan. We're going to dig out around the perimeter so we can accommodate some insulation. Now, the edge of the insulation will be somewhat exposed. And I've got some slab exposed. So how am I going to deal with this? Well, I think what we're going to do, the plan is I'm going to wrap the insulation with ice and water shield and go up under the edge of the building, which is steel. I can unscrew the bottom edge and sneak up underneath that, so we have a drip edge to drain any moisture if there is a flat area, a vertical area, horizontal area, excuse me. But we've also protected the foam, not necessarily from a lot of wear and tear, but from sunlight. And we will report back to you on how well all that works. But we've got to insulate that edge. That's really critical. That's the most critical part of the whole package. I'm tempted to leave part of it undone. And there's been a lot of variations on the theme, Jim. And I got to take a break because I'm going way over here. But the there was a guy I knew years ago who built his foundation form out of pressure-treated 2x whatevers and left them in place after the pour. And he said, "Well, that's insulation." Well, yeah, it kind of is. It's a better thermal break than just having bare concrete. And of course, he insulated underneath the slab. But I should run some numbers on that. But I got to do this right now. I got to take a break because I am way over. And when we come back, we'll take more calls. Stay with us. It's Hot and Cold. We're back. It's hour number 1.5. It's 9:21 here at the Voice of Maine on a sunny set. Is that sun out there? That sky almost looks blue through the three windows, through Studio A, B, and C, and that's a good sign. Our number's 1-800-966-1039. We got the text line up and running, 601-207-4478. I got a text here. I'm no expert. Heavy equipment operator, not a builder. Just figured I would input. And is that extruded polystyrene, the stuff used underneath concrete slabs? Extruded polystyrene is, expanded polystyrene is a variation. There's two kinds of polystyrene insulation, extruded and expanded. So extruded is what we call styrofoam. It's blue, pink, green, gray. Sometimes the colors denote different densities, but it's a little bit higher R value than expanded, which is what we call beadboard, which is not as strong because many times it is a lower density. It's made a slightly different process. And R value, I think one is probably, the expanded, the R value is somewhere between 3.5 and 4.2 per inch, where extruded is closer to 5 per inch. So just a little bit of a difference there, and extruded is stronger. So, but you can buy expanded really cheap. So a lot of times if you see really, if somebody needs a lot of insulation, and especially if they're making building panels, they'll use expanded polystyrene, which makes a thicker panel, which makes the building inherently stronger because of the thickness, believe it or not, even though this foam is relatively weak. I've spent a lot of time messing around with foam, of all different kinds of foam. And one interesting thing that I found is that this is sort of an anecdotal study on my part, but if you base the wall thickness on R value. So let's say for the sake of discussion, we did an R40 wall and we used urethane, we used styrofoam, we used expanded polystyrene. The expanded polystyrene wall would be the thickest. The urethane would probably be the thinnest. They all are similar in kind of similar in structural strength, given that there's more thickness in the expanded polystyrene wall. It just is inherently, it works out to be about the same. And we did some interesting tests with this years ago at the university to see how strong these panels were, or foam building panels now. And it was fascinating to do. And when one has the time and the funding to do such things. Back over to line one we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey.
You do cars and building and everything, but a head gasket on the Subaru, is that a big job?
Yes.
Every guy I tell it to, their mouth hangs down. and I say, it's a head gasket. They go, and their mouth goes right down.
Yeah.
So it's a big job?
It is a big job. There are people who do it, and I don't know the guy's name, and maybe somebody out there in Radio Land could tell us, but there's a fellow on the Christian Ridge Road in Ellsworth who just does Subarus. That's all he does.
Oh, okay. What road is it?
The Christian Ridge Road.
And you don't know the name of the guy?
I don't. I'll see if I can get it for you next week. Maybe somebody can call in and tell us.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you very much. You do a good job.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye. Sorry that you're having the problem, but it is inherent with Subarus. Matter of fact, somebody called in and wanted to trade a Subaru in for a Prius. I said, I'm sorry, I don't take Subarus in trade. I don't. I like them when they're running. And I don't like them when I smell the oil leaking. That's not a pleasant time. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. We still have plenty of time for your phone calls. Being as it's only 9:26, maybe we'll check in with Pete in a little bit. I got the weed whacker running for him. He may be out whacking weeds. So we'll see. And I will mention, just in case he does not call in, that I think what we're going to do is give the option for the first person that comes in to buy a car from our new location. They will get the photovoltaic panel of their choice, of which we have two to choose from, two different types. So that's just something that is out there. And speak of the devil, I think this is my forlorn son, Peter. Good morning, Pete. Pete, are you there? Oh, hang on, Pete. I'm sorry. You there now?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I hear you now. There we go.
All right. Good.
So
what's going on?
Nothing. I'm just sitting here doing a radio show.
Oh.
What about you?
I am operational. The doors are open in a new location at 24 US Route 1 in Stockton Springs, across from Just Barb's restaurant.
Okay.
We've got 5 cars out front for sale, soon to be 6. The sixth one, I don't know if you know this, is a hybrid Highlander.
I did notice that. I got to drive it last night.
Yeah, it's super nice. It's got the wood trim, the leather, it's got third row seating, the whole bit. I think it's got the flip down DVD player that we can never figure out how to use.
Oh, it does. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't showed this car to your mother because she'd want to keep it.
Yeah, well, in that case, we probably ought to get rid of it pretty quick. Now, listen, I was trying to come up actually with a shtick to call in with, but I do have a legitimate question for you.
Okay.
Where are the solvents?
Oh, they're all together. They're all together. I want to say they're somewhere in the proximity of my table that is set up for working on batteries. I figured this way, when the batteries short out and start a fire, the solvents are right there to quench the fire.
I'd like to give a big shout out to our insurance company.
I did have that active thought when I put them there.
Nothing is set up that way. He's kidding.
That's where they are. I think they're behind some OSB that's leaning up against one of those wire shelves.
Okay, so just wood batteries and solvents.
Yeah. They should be together.
All right, good.
Although I did, you were putting something metal against lithium batteries yesterday. I caught that before we went too far down that road. So
maybe those batteries should have been capped, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So, Pete, you got my email or text about
the weed whacker?
Not that. The photovoltaic panels. So the first person who buys a car from us is getting a free photovoltaic panel of their choice, of which we have the two.
I was going to say that I thought there was only one. I don't know what the other one is.
Well, we've got the 48 volt and we've got the 24 volt.
Okay.
Matter of fact, they might even get two 48 volts because they're only 190 watt.
Let's not go crazy.
Oh, right? I don't know. Everything
has to be free.
Yeah.
Guess who the good cop is and who the bad cop is.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Well, it depends. You know, come in and you get your choice. I like to have people have choices.
Yeah. Oh, hey, one other thing.
Yeah.
What was your final step count from yesterday?
I said this last hour. This is an ongoing thing we have. Who's walking more? Hang on here, Pete.
It's under duress. Usually I'm carrying something when I'm doing it, or sawing something, or why I didn't finish college.
I got to change the units here. Oh, I could do kilometers or miles. For some reason, I lost the steps. I did about 5.6 miles. I know you had me beat by a little bit.
Yeah. By the time I went to sleep, I was at 18,280 steps.
Yeah. Yay. On your time, miles. It doesn't matter. You know, don't
my
give
time
me this.
Matters. It adds up, all right? By the time it's my time, I'm tired.
Hey.
I don't want to do it again.
Who was outside whacking weeds last night, long after you went home and took
exactly
a shower?
What you were doing there, you were trying to be a know-it-all with your weed whackers that don't work, and you wanted to prove that they do work, and you wanted to get your step count up as well.
That's right. Well, you know,
exactly.
I think I did. And
I've worked for you for a few years.
Okay.
I know what time it is.
Okay. Well, look, I got to let you go because I got a break here I got to take. Watch out, that Ryobi weed whacker. I think the gas tank is cracked, so don't pick it up because it'll get gas all over you like I did yesterday.
I'll put it next to the batteries.
Thank you. Safety first.
Somebody come in and buy this Highlander so I don't have to finish getting it ready.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Pete, thank you. We'll see you in a while.
All right.
All right. We got to take a break here. It is 9:31, and it's time for a break. So we'll take the break. We're going to mellow out after talking to Pete. That's appropriate. We'll be right back. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We still got time. Oh, I'll tell you what's going on, Marvin. It's hot and cold. Saturday morning, 9:37. It ain't 9:37. It's 9:37, Tom. You can enunciate. I'm allowing that. And our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. Right there, line one. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, good. I've got another slab preparation question for you.
Sure.
For freezing thaw concerns. This is just a little 16 by 10 garden shed that's never going to be lived in. I just don't know the best way to prepare it. I've got good dry gravel soil.
Good.
I plan on putting some dry draining stone underneath the slab and some vapor barrier, but is it thinking just to let it all move when it wants to move? And what's the best thing to do? I know in the other slabs I've talked to you about, I've put foam underneath.
If you've got good drainage, the insulate, and it's just a storage shed, it's not critical. But again, we want to know that it's draining well, that there's no hard pan or anything where, when I go to Western Maine and I see like the Sandy River area where everything is sand, and I'm like so envious because living here in Eastern Maine with all the swale holes, and I've got gravel on my site, and we dug gravel. There was a gravel pit on my property a long time ago, and we took gravel out of that for doing some, you know, grading and stuff. And that gravel pit, which was done, I think it was done September, October, is full of water. Huh. Now, wait a minute. This is a gravel pit. It is, I mean, it's probably 8 feet deep. I think we're going to stock it with trout, and we're going to make it a tourist attraction. It's absolutely amazing. So there is hard pan there somewhere.
Right.
It's kind of amazing. Yeah. It was bone dry all summer last year because there was some excavation from years ago. If you're seeing that, you're pretty certain it's a dry site. I think just removing the vegetation and grading it and, you know, maybe letting it sit in the rain a little bit just to settle out is probably all you need to do. If you think there might be a change of use at some point, it wouldn't hurt to put insulation down, but I don't think that's hypercritical in this case.
Yeah, I've got some insulation. I just don't want to go to that expense. I've got some polyester cyanate that I thought about trying to make a plastic bag out of because I know that shouldn't get wet, really.
Again, if you have well-drained soils, you don't need to do that. You could just put the vapor barrier down, put the foam on top. I have polyiso on our slab, under our slab, 3-inch for the most part, and I've got a vapor barrier down, the polyiso on top of it, and the slab on top of that. And the polyiso, if you do a slab on grade, and the time that that insulation is going to pick up moisture is when it's underwater. If you have a slab on grade and your insulation, which is 4 to 6 inches under the slab, is underwater, you have other issues you're worrying about.
Right. No, I won't have that.
Yeah. So you would not need to wrap it. I would put something underneath it, put the insulation on top, and call it good. Even if it extends out beyond the edge of the slab to keep frost from trying to get underneath it, I wouldn't worry about that at all.
That was my second question. Should I extend it out beyond?
Like you got a really excellent site. I would just go out a couple of feet, and that'd be more than enough.
Yeah. Now, if the alternate, would it be and make any sense just to put insulate beyond the slab and just let the slab be on my well-drained ground? I'm new to the frost thing. I'm from down south, and I've only been here for 10 years. And I've all kinds of different things I have to deal with that I'm not used to
in
construction.
But we don't have poisonous snakes, so there, right?
but they let you know when you're around, they're around. Except for copperheads. They're mean.
Yeah.
But all right, I think I'll just make sure. I know it's well-drained. It's high.
Yeah.
And I think I'll just go for it.
Yeah. Okay.
Would you eliminate the gravel? I mean, if it's deep.
If you got gravel, if you take off the topsoil and the grass and topsoil and you got gravel there, I'd call it good.
Oh, I know I got gravel there because I took about 4 feet of this little knoll off to make it level anyway.
Yep. I would just go ahead, you know, let it weather a little bit and then pour.
Okay, Doug.
All right.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye. Right. Yeah, that should be enough. I'm not sure all the poisonous snakes are going to say, hey, I'm ready to bite you. The rattlesnakes will, but one reason to live in Maine. The other reason is the Prius batteries last longer. I was telling somebody that the other day. The one blessing we have is that down south, batteries, any batteries in a car, 12-volt battery, hybrid batteries, electric car batteries, age prematurely because of the heat. We ain't got that problem. So there. That's a good thing. Let's see. Just want to check the text real quick. Excuse me. We got one here. Originally, I just remembered the guy who does mechanic work in Ellsworth under Christian. All right. Hey, Tom, thank you. Tom from Brooksville. The guy on Christian Ridge, Margie, pay attention. The guy on the Christian Ridge Road who does the Subarus, his name is Larry Beal. I don't have a phone number, but his address is 192 Christian Ridge Road. Larry, I'll expect a payment at some point. Good guy. I've spoken. Excuse me. I've dealt with him. My son had a Subaru at one point before he learned better. I shouldn't say that. He had a good experience with the car. Like I say, when they're running good and you have a good mechanic, it makes all the difference. But I believe Larry's phone number is in the book. Larry Beal, 192 Christian Ridge Road in Ellsworth. So there's your plug, my friend. You deserve it. Let's go back over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, hello. I've been looking online for air-to-water heat pumps and for space heating.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that the closest thing that I find to what I want is listed as coming from Searsport, Maine.
Yeah, I wonder who's selling those.
Is that you?
It is. Yeah.
It's okay.
We have a we've been dealing with these for a couple of years. We have a website, heatingstuffllc.com. I didn't choose the name. So you can look there as well, where there's a lot more information, I believe. And or you can contact me off the air, and I can kind of fill you in. These units work best with radiant slabs, a concrete slab that's got tubing in it, or convectors, which we also have available. And a convector, this is a fan convector, which has a little blower in it, and they're very quiet. And they also work well with radiant panels.
Yeah, I'm thinking of trying putting the radiant under an existing floor and
okay.
going into that system, which I realize is nowhere near as good as a slab. But
yeah, they don't. I'll be honest, we've not done any that way. My experience is that probably it's not going to perform as well because it has to run hotter. When you're doing a radiant concrete slab, and you could do a thin slab, in an existing room, it adds about an inch and a quarter thickness, I believe.
Yeah.
That would allow you to use probably 90 to 100 degree water, which is really the sweet spot for the highest performance for these heat pumps.
So you're in the act of moving.
I have moved. I do not have the heat pump. We had the heat pumps in our warehouse in Searsport. I had to move them back to our warehouse in Ellsworth because I ran out of. I didn't have the room for them, and I don't have a forklift right now. So, I could load trucks before. I cannot do that right now. So, I have two partners, and they one of them has a warehouse in Ellsworth, so we have them there.
Okay. Well, if I were to come to see you to see if you have any more information and everything is.
I don't have a lot at the office, but if you want to email me, I can email you. I think I've got everything on the computer we just moved, manuals and stuff. I have not unpacked any of the heat pump stuff yet.
Okay. But, now, one more question.
Sure.
Just what you have on your eBay site, it talks about it controlling a 230-volt circulation pump.
Right.
Is that something that comes with it? Or?
No. That's extra. No. We do have those available. You could use a relay to operate a 110-volt pump. But these are made overseas and really made for the European market, which everything is 230 volts.
Yeah.
So we do have pumps that run on 230, so that pump wires back to the heat pump. But as I say, you could use a relay that would switch a 110-volt pump on as well.
Okay. Well, I'm excited. This sounds good.
Okay.
So, I've got everything else. I've got a Goodtide solar system, and I heated my house last year and all my electrical use for this minimum distribution charge plus less than $8 excess electricity.
Wow.
So
good. Might be a good fit.
I've dialed in pretty close here. And, yeah. I'm thinking of adding five more panels. Mm-hmm. It's the most my inverter can take. So.
Yeah.
And where I will be replacing another mini-split heat pump, it'll be doing the job of that. So I think I'll be pretty well matched for loads.
Good.
So it sounds exciting.
Okay. Look forward to talking with you. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Got a couple of texts here. What do you have for Priuses and how much? I try not to advertise this. I try not to make this what's Tom got to sell. You can go to our website, which is www.prius.store. Anything we have for sale is up. It changes almost daily. And it's, again, prius.store is the web address. And you can also email me if you have any questions about specifics. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah, Tom, I got to test your 6-volt knowledge.
Okay.
I have a 49 Chevy pickup. It wasn't charging the battery, so I had the generator rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put it back in, the voltmeter was way up, so I figured I was all set. But I didn't polarize the voltage regulator.
Mm-hmm.
I found that out after I went on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to bench test the generator, but can I test it without taking it out of the truck if I disconnect it, take the battery, bring it under the hood, and loosen the pulley? Would
Man.
That still be able to?
No, 1949 was before I was born. I've had few 12-volt systems I've ever worked on. I'll be honest, you got me on that one. I will give you a name and a phone number, though, somebody you can check with who will be able to answer your question. A fellow in Carmel who rebuilds everything by way of alternators and starters. His name is Reggie Clement, and his number is 848-3404.
3404?
Yes, sir. And if you don't get him, leave a message. He will call you back.
Okay.
He's the guru.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Let's see. We got some other texts here. Question, is there a source for what? I'm not sure. What is WIID that is ready made to accept window pane? I'm not sure what that. I'm going to read this verbatim because, Joe, you need to clarify. You misspelled something here. Question, is there a source for WIID that is already made to accept a window pane? All you have to do is cut to length and put it together. I have no idea what you're asking me. Please send the text again with a little more information. We have a couple minutes left. You have to try to spell them right. I can't figure that one out. That's a little beyond me. We got a phone call. Go figure. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi. I have a question about heat pumps.
Sure.
You're talking about those. I have a System 2000 in my house, and I have a little side heat, you know, with a wood stove. But if I put a heat pump in, you know, I'm going to get air conditioning. But is it really worthwhile in terms of saving heat or running a heat pump and turning my furnace down?
I think so. I think the economics kind of make sense. Generally the party line that I've heard is that you're buying fuel at the cost of natural gas, but it's coming in on the wire. And I think that's a pretty good analogy. But to me, the more important part, aside from the fact that you're probably going to save energy, is that down the road, if and when you had a solar system in place, you can be banking energy with utility and using it in the winter to operate the heat pump.
Okay.
And that gives you the potential to generate a lot of that energy on your site. And the utility's using it, basically utility, you're generating it in the summer when there's a lot of sun, and it's going right south to people down south who need AC more than we do. You're not going to be anywhere near your air conditioning load. So you'll have excess capacity, depending on the size of the system, and then you can use that to displace some of the operating cost of the heat pump in the winter. And that becomes a real interesting scheme that I think will evolve over time into a major way for the energy economy to transform, at least a bit. I think ultimately we're going to have some storage on site, but and this is going to become a more sophisticated system as time goes on.
I would expect.
Yeah.
I have one other question.
Yeah.
Quite a few years ago when you had your TV show, you made a little garage shed out of foam and
yeah.
Whatever became of that, is it still up? Still?
Yeah, it still is. The original one I did is, I drove by it this morning, as a matter of fact. It looks fine. We have a shed in our shop that we're actually trying to sell because I have to move it out of our old building. It's 8 feet by 12 feet, and it's 8 feet tall. And it is built similarly, except it has a pressure-treated insulated floor and skids, of course. So the roof is a flat. I just made a flat roof because I wanted a high-pitched roof. And if we built it ahead of time, we couldn't get it down the road. So I just left it flat with a flat ceiling, and I insulated it with foam. So after it was on site, it could be the roof could be erected. But we should have some videos of those up. We do not how to do them, and we might wind up, if I don't sell the building, which I'm giving away at this point practically, in terms of what I spent on it, it's going to my house. I'm going to put it in my yard, replace my shed.
Right. Very interesting. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. We got a couple quick texts here. Let's see if we can. Okay. Jim got me. So is there a source for wood that is readily made to accept the window pane? I don't know, Jim. You would think there would be, except I don't know of any source. And I can't direct you to anybody. Matthews Brothers used to make wooden windows. I assume they still do to some degree. But I do not have a source that I can suggest. I know there's folks who you don't have to get real elaborate. But if you have a router, it'd be easy enough to make your own. So that's as much as I can give you on that right now. Do I have a link to our web store, eBay store? I don't. It's heating stuff. If you get on eBay and put in heat pump, air to water, I think you'll find it. Or heat, maybe put in Searsport. I don't know. It's there. But you can also go to heatingstuffllc.com, and you'll see everything there as well. And you can shoot me an email. You can shoot me an email through eBay, too. But we got to go because we are out of time for this week. We'll see you all next week. Same time, same place. Take care.